Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye, hitting the solo recap of the Nets' loss to the Cavs, 115-109, four-game losing streak. The Nets cannot get to that 40-win mark. We're going to jump to that and plenty more. Make sure you check the Buzz on all streaming platforms. Also, give us a follow on Instagram at Brooklyn Buzz Pod. But looking at this game, you know, it started the way the Nets wanted it to. They won that first quarter 30-23. Claxton, Bridges really came out with good energy, and it looked like the Nets were going to have a competitive matchup with the Cavs. Second quarter and third quarter come around, and the Cavs are essentially dominating the game, you know, walking into the fourth quarter with a double-digit lead and really feeling comfortable. You know, a fourth quarter run from the Nets gave them a chance to cut it close at the end, but really the Cavs are always in control of this one. And a big reason why was the offensive stagnation and the defensive issues. You know, in that first quarter, we saw them trap a lot of Cavs pick and rolls, and that led to some turnovers and some easy buckets in transition. Now, that second and third quarter, that did not work. The Cavs were breaking down that trap, finding the open man. The rotations were not crispy. You know, they were making bad decisions, coming off players that probably should not be left open and sticking to guys that should have been left open. You know, specifically looking at Isaac Okoro, you know, a guy like him on the floor, you're going to let him shoot as many times as he wants, as many threes as he wants, you know, instead of giving guys like Donovan Mitchell, Jetty Osman open threes. And that was really a big reason the Nets lost this game, was the three ball. You know, 14-29 for the Cavs at 48%. The Nets, on the other hand, shot 9-33 at 27%. A lot of guys shot poorly from three. We're talking Mikal Bridges 0-8, Spencer Dinwiddie 1-5, Royce O'Neal 2-7. Just not getting it done. And we've talked about for the last month how three-point variation was going to dictate a lot of Nets wins and losses, and that's been the case. You know, over this four-game stretch, they've really struggled from three, and they're not generating enough offense in other ways. And obviously, some of that's just limitations to the roster, limitation of the skill sets they have, some of it probably being coaching and the fact that this team was thrown together in mid-February rather than having an offseason and training camp to really work on things. And in a night where the Nets even outscore the Cavs in the paint, 54-44, it wasn't enough. You know, the Nets beat the Cavs in second chance points 19-10. Still wasn't enough. Fast break points 15-9 in favor of the Nets. And really, it ultimately came down to three-point shooting. And that was a huge factor for the Cavs in this game and a big reason they won. And obviously, you know, having a star player like Donovan Mitchell and, you know, a good role player in Caris LeVert who got hot in this one, is something the Nets don't necessarily have, or guys are not playing at that level currently. You know, you look at a lot of these matchups with teams around the same level as the Nets, it feels like those teams feel confident they can win on most nights against this team. You know, they understand what they need to do and how a double-digit lead really feels good because of some of the offensive stagnations that this unit goes through. You know, you look, as I mentioned, that second quarter scored 25 points, that third quarter scored 23 points. You know, it's going to be tough to win games, especially when the other team is so hot from three. And again, this is a bigger issue than a one game thing. This is kind of now more of a constant theme, you know, given, as I mentioned, the limitations of the roster, the limitations of the current scheme for in-season stuff. The Nets are just having a hard time, and Mikal Bridges has cooled off a little bit. I think the workload is starting to catch up to him. Looking at his game, finished with 18 points, 9 of 21 from the field, 0 of 8 from 3, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 turnovers, minus 16. I think obviously the 0 of 8 from 3 really sticks out. It feels like he's been automatic from the corner from the Nets since he's joined this team. And tonight missed a ton of open looks, including some potential big shots in that fourth quarter that could have made the game even a little bit tighter. Like I mentioned, it kind of feels like the workload is catching up to Mikal, because defensively, I thought he wasn't very good in this game. Obviously, Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, two guys very hard to stay in front of, but he also made some poor decisions, I thought, defensively in this one that just didn't ultimately help the team. And the Nets need him to be really good. You know, this is a team that doesn't have necessarily a superstar. Mikal is viewed as the Nets' best player, and, you know, back-to-back, not, I don't want to say bad games, but below average games for the standard he set in Brooklyn, it's going to be tough to win unless the other guys are really having huge nights. And no one on this team really had a huge night other than the centers. You know, I thought Nick Claxton and De'Ron Sharp were probably the Nets' two best players in this one. De'Ron had arguably his best game as a pro, finished plus 27 in 20 minutes, had 20 points, 8 of 12 from the field, 1 of 1 from 3, 3 of 4 from the free throw line, 11 rebounds, 9 offensive, 2 steals, 2 blocks. I mean, this was the best he's looked, you know, especially because this was against a good front court in Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, and you really saw De'Ron Sharp utilize his size and his strength and really created space on the boards and found ways to be impactful. And, you know, I think you could even argue he's found a better chemistry with Spencer Dinwiddie on the pick and roll than Nick Claxton has already. And obviously that's more to do with the chemistry between the players rather than, you know, skill sets. But De'Ron, you know, made some strides in this game. Will it mean anything moving forward? We'll find out. You know, I think there'll be more opportunities for him to play over this final stretch of the season. Obviously, they did sign Moses Brown to a 10-day contract. Maybe that motivated De'Ron Sharp, seeing, you know, Brown and Nerlens Noel brought in. Sharp understanding that, you know, there's some pressure on him to be impactful this season and how it could, you know, help his progress as a pro. But really, a lot of energy, effort, and I thought defensively was solid in this game. And I think over the course of the entire season, there has been many times where, you know, you could say De'Ron had a solid defensive game. So props to him. And, you know, obviously I haven't been the biggest Sharp believer, but this goes a long way if he can put together, you know, a couple good games before the season ends. But over to the starting center, Nick Claxton, finished with 13 points, 6 of 10 from the field, 1 of 1 from the free throw line, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 1 block, 2 turnovers. I thought Clax was really good. No, he was minus 33, but that felt more like a component of the pieces he was on the floor with. It just feels like the offense gets so disorganized and stagnant at times, a lot with the starters too, where there's just stretches where, you know, nothing is happening. It's dribble handoff from Clax to Cam Johnson, who dribbles the ball, passes to Spencer Dinwiddie, dribbles some ball, ends up taking a shot, you know, late in the shot clock. You know, there's just no rhyme or reason to what they're doing offensively at times. And obviously, I think that impacts a player like Claxton, who's, you know, having his best attacks off advantages created by other players, be it the pick and roll, be it, you know, guys winning one-on-ones off the dribble. And as I mentioned before, you know, his chemistry with Spencer Dinwiddie right now is still developing in a lot of those situations. And it feels like sometimes the struggle is Dinwiddie and Clax, their best skills, I think, athletically is their speed in comparison to their opponent. And they're both kind of rushing to get to the rim. And really, it kind of almost defends them both with just one player, because you're seeing Claxton get there so quick and Dinwiddie's trying to do the same thing. You know, with Sharp, it's a little bit of a slowdown stagger at times and getting those drop-off passes or going into the opposite direction of Dinwiddie, and it kind of has allowed him to set up for some more things. And obviously we know Clax is a lob catcher. Dinwiddie, not his best skill.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But moving over to Spencer, finished with 19 points, 6 of 15 from the field, 1 of 5 from 3, 6 of 8 from the free throw line, 5 rebounds, 11 assists, 2 turnovers, and was plus 12. I think it was a solid game for Dinwiddie, not an amazing game. You know, the shooting 6 of 15 is not ideal. You'd love to see him maybe shoot a little better from 3, but you love the 11 assists, you love the 8 free throw attempts, and I thought he did a good job of trying to find a balance of when to attack and when not to attack. And given, you know, the team was struggling offensively, I thought, especially in that fourth quarter and late in that third, he really picked it up and went into attack mode, trying to get into the paint and find opportunities to score. You know, he was good enough for the Nets to win this game. As I mentioned, I thought, you know, Sharp, Clax, Dinwiddie, and probably Royce O'Neal were good enough for the Nets to win this game. And Royce finished with 12 points, 4-9 from the field, 2-7 from 3, 2-4 from the free throw line, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 blocks. Did have 4 turnovers, which wasn't great. And, you know, some of those being just bad decisions. But overall, I thought Royce had some solid moments and just was part of that unit that made a run late in the third and early in the fourth to kind of close this game and give the Nets an opportunity to make somewhat of a push. You know, I wouldn't say a realistic comeback, but maybe a lucky comeback. And those were guys that were just out there doing what they needed to do. As we touched on, Mikal Bridges, not his best night. Cam Johnson really didn't pick it up until the fourth quarter. You know, finished with 16 points, 4 of 11 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3, 6 of 6 on the free throw line. Did have 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal, 1 turnover. I think one thing I'd love to see from Cam Johnson is looking for him to attack smaller players. You know, the Cavs elected to put Darius Garland on him most of this game, and he wasn't really able to take advantage of that. I thought more in the fourth, he was just attacking a lot of closeouts and getting into the paint and trying to get to the rim or get to some of that those in-between shots. Cam is definitely been all over the place over the course of the last 2 weeks. It felt like early on that we were going to see, you know, an offensive surge from him, not to the same level of Mikal Bridges, but maybe, you know, raising himself in terms of an offensive tier. It's kind of just been all over the place. It feels like maybe his confidence has taken a hit. He's been more hesitant. You know, I'd love to see him probably take more pull-ups from two. Maybe that's something he's hearing from the Nets coaching staff, but given the way they've been so stagnant, you know, he's a guy that does have talent and maybe could be expanded into a bigger role at times, but also some of that is him being more aggressive and taking care of those opportunities. Over to Joe Harris, played about 20 minutes in this game, 6 points, 2 of 4 from the field, 2 of 4 from three, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. Overall, you know, solid game from Joe, not necessarily a huge impact either way, which you could probably say is a positive because it didn't feel like he was getting demolished defensively. I thought he had a couple good rotations and was okay on that end of the floor, but, you know, decent game for Joe Harris. Yuta Watanabe, we saw play 11 minutes in this one, finished with 0 points, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 1 turnover, and got posterized by Donovan Mitchell, as bad as it really can come. Yuta didn't necessarily have his best game. I thought he had some struggles defending Caris LeVert with kind of his herky-jerky nature, allowed him to get to the free throw line a couple times and wasn't really necessarily involved offensively. Seth Curry, 0 points, 0-3 from the field. A lot of those were bad shots. Did have one assist and defensively was not good in this one. Dorian Finney-Smith played about 17 minutes, finished with 5 points, 2-6 from the field, 1-3 from three, 2 rebounds, and did have one steal. I think with Dorian Finney-Smith, the offensive struggles are showcased more given the Nets as a team are struggling. You know, if they were playing better, or this is, you know, the KD and Kyrie Nets, Dorian Finney-Smith not playing well offensively is not that big a deal. You know, you're not asking him to do much. He's probably sitting in the corner a lot more, not being involved in some of these actions. But instead, you know, it's more highlighted because of the overall struggle of the team and him being on the floor and making some bad decisions offensively with his passing, and also obviously not being able to knock down shots. So overall, just not a good game. You know, the team has not necessarily been playing good basketball. And I think this is not super surprising given the talent level. You know, they're at a talent level where they have good players. They have guys that can really shine on certain nights, but they also lack chemistry. They lack an offseason. They lack a training camp. There's not much cohesion. Doesn't seem like there's perfectly defined roles offensively and what guys should be doing. And there's not just not enough going on at that end of the floor for them to be great. And especially with the lack of, like I mentioned, the talent and skill sets to have a really functioning offense in 2023. They lack the playmakers. They lack the creation. You know, they don't necessarily have those tough shot makers. They don't have a ton of rim pressure. And then I think you look at the defensive end of the floor is they have a ton of talent on that end of the floor, but there's no cohesion and there's not necessarily a scheme that they feel at this time is perfect. You know, over the course of the last 3 weeks, we've seen them play, you know, a variation of switching, drop coverage. Tonight we saw trapping, we saw zone. It's like they're not very sure in the communication and decision-making on that end of the floor. So a lot of the mental stuff defensively is holding this team back. And it also hurts is you're subbing some guys in off the bench that are just poor defenders. And if your identity as a team is to be very good defensively, having some of these bad defenders come in the game who aren't lighting it up offensively, now, you know, you're having negative on both ends of the floor. So it's really just a lot of push and pull with this team. It's probably going to be frustrating, you know, throughout the rest of the season. We'll most likely see some really nice wins, but also some more tough losses like this 4-game losing streak. And now the Nets match up with the Cavs again on Thursday. They're going to see the Heat this weekend on Saturday. A lot of big games, you know, a lot of opportunities for the Nets to maintain their spot in the standings. Currently have a half game lead on the Heat. So that game on Saturday is going to be huge. The game Thursday against the Cavs is going to be huge. Given tonight's loss, now the Cavs are 6 games up on the Nets with about anywhere from 9 to 10 games remaining for, you know, those teams. And it seems like a lock that they'll be at the very best of 5th seed, but most likely a 6th seed or in that play-in tournament. We'll see how it all kind of progresses. If guys can find a rhythm, get back on track, and just, you know, play competitive basketball for 4 quarters. Because right now we're seeing some good quarters where, you know, we saw a good first quarter, we saw a good 4th quarter, but we saw a terrible 2nd and 3rd. And the Nets are a team that they just can't afford to have those terrible quarters. If they're going to have a below average quarter and lose by 5 or 6, that's okay. But getting beat by double digits in back-to-back quarters, it's going to be tough for this team to win and beat another playoff team. But appreciate everybody listening. As always, you can find The Buzz on all streaming platforms. And as I mentioned, give us a follow on Instagram at Brooklyn Buzz Pod.